What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me on the latest Mortcast, part of the CSG and MHS network. I'm of course your host, Jeff Morton. Now a couple weeks ago, someone asked me how I came up with my intro. What is up, everybody? I will tell you, no one comes up with that. That is the most generic intro that you could possibly have. So I can't claim credit for something I've been doing for 10 years. I will say that it's out of laziness, and it is not something that is created. So anyway, you heard the laughter of my guest here, and I'm sure you saw it when you clicked on this podcast or downloaded it or whatever you do. It is my friend, who I haven't actually had on here for a while, I don't think. Director of content at DNVR and Lockdown Nuggets. He also does the post-game stuff with the NVR on there, which you could also listen to as a podcast, and many other things. He also does Lockdown NBA on Fridays, if I remember correctly. So it is my friend, who I haven't had on here for a while, as I said, Adam Arias. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. I think we made this joke last time, but the old Jerome Jerenovich introduction, like... Not a great catchphrase, but you're right. I never thought of a catchphrase either when we got started. I say the same thing every time, but now it's just out of habit. But I wish I would have put more thought into that. So all you young podcasters out there, come up with a good catchphrase now.
Yes, do it. Do it now, because they'll remember it. Because people say, like, oh man, what is up, everybody? It's like, no, that's just... No, because Ross and Nate, behind the curtain, Ross and Nate would give me shit for not having one, because they both had one when we started the podcast. And I finally did, well, what is up, everybody? And it stuck, and it's just stupid. So, Mr. Mares, we need to talk about some things, because our Denver Nuggets have gone 0-3 the last three games, with a loss against Dallas Mavericks, a 1-point loss where Jamal Murray looked like a guy who's coming back from injury. To kind of start us off, what is your kind of take on, I mean, I've been listening to Locked On and your conversations with Matt, and Matt said something I'm going to get to in a bit, but what is your kind of overall view of the kind of funk that they've been in? Is it something that you think is, what is the causation that you've seen from looking at it from basically my vantage point too?
What is the reason for this slump, this lull?
Or what is your view of why they're kind of just, kind of in this lackadaisical area?
I mean, it does feel like the season is a slog already, which is one of the things you have to avoid as a team. Like, 82 games really is like too many for you just to be good. You're not really building towards anything for 82 games. So you have to find a way to like do other things along the way. And I do think one of those things is just like enjoy each other's company and enjoy the time. And, you know, you're working towards small micro goals, but it's an enjoyable experience. Right now, they've got like, I think half the roster has a look on their face of, we have five more months of this. Like, the finish line is so far away, and everybody seems, Malone. And I think if I were to say one thing that really stands out to me, Malone's ripping the team apart after a 30-point win over Houston, to me, that I'm not totally surprised that they went on a three-game losing streak after that. I'm not trying to pin it all on that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's a moment that is indicative of what it seems like being around the team. It just seems like where they are. It's like, it's early November. Like, I don't want to be grounded, man. I don't want to be grounded if my homework's late the first week of the semester.
Well, this is a Malone thing, as we both know. He just kind of does these things. And I knew when it happened that they weren't going to respond well to it, and they didn't, quite frankly. Right. You can draw a direct line. And there's a 30-point win against the Houston Rockets, and then playing like you don't want to be there the next game, next game. It's just, it is what it is, right? You can't deny it. And Malone finally changes up the rotation. They play a little better against the Mavericks after losing in a really awful game against the Pelicans. But more than that, the defense has been awful. And it has been putrid. It's the worst of the Malone era, maybe going back to 2016. So what is your view of the defense right now? Because I kind of have a view that there's some handicaps that the Nuggets have that's really hard to overcome. But that doesn't mean that it should be just historically bad. What is your kind of view of why the defense is where it is right now?
It's another good question. I mean, I have a lot of theories on this one. The one that I'm most tied to right now is that the Nuggets are just not exhausting to play against. And it's partially a defensive issue, but I think it's a lot of just the general how the team plays. Their style of play is very slow, very methodical. And that works for some teams. Dallas is a slow, methodical team, but it's done in a different way that allows them to be a very transition defense-oriented team. Guys aren't expending a lot of energy on the offensive end, so they're not really expending it on the defensive end and all that kind of stuff. They're also just longer than Denver. But I think Denver right now, I mean, this is my big thing, and you have been a diehard Nuggets fan as long as anybody. Mm-hmm. How many times have the Nuggets, when you were playing a team on the second night of a back-to-back, the other team just punts? They just say, you know what, we're going to Denver the second night. Yeah. We're not even going to bring our guys. Or, you know what, let's give it to half. But if they're out of it, let's just kind of not throw in the towel, but we're not going to really come. And I think playing in Denver on the second night of a back-to-back has never been easier, in large part because of how slow Denver plays, how deliberately Denver plays, and just how easy they are to guard. Again, not easy in terms of can you stop them, because Denver scores on you, but just easy as in, well, they scored on us, but man, I got to take a 20-second rest. So I think it has to do with a lot of different things, length on the defensive end and all the, you know, personnel, buy-in, effort. But I think it has a sneaky large amount to do with just how little Denver makes other teams work.
I agree with this, and we're going to get into this now, but I'm glad you brought this up. It has been endlessly frustrating for me as someone who has watched the Nuggets since 1987, as someone who saw these Nuggets teams run teams basically to ragged out of a gym on the second night. They would do it purposely. It doesn't have to be all the time, but purposely you identify that you're on the West Coast to Denver back to back, and you're going to get nailed by this Nuggets team. And it happened every single time. Obviously, the NBA has done some things to mitigate the home court advantage for the Nuggets. But what has happened is the Nuggets in the Malone era have just been getting slower and slower and slower.
Yeah.
And it has hasn't neutralized their home court advantage, because a lot of it has to do with how good you are. But the other part of it is that you can sneak out some 2, 3, 4, 5 wins a year by running a team out of the gym that just is tired. And the Nuggets have not done that. They've deliberately not done that. And it's been exceedingly frustrating to me as someone who's watched the Nuggets for this long. And I can't figure out why you would not even try, I guess, is my thing. And they always blame Jokic. Jokic likes to go fast. He likes to get those outlet passes out there. He's not going to, slow you down as much as Jamal will. So, I mean,
yeah, he'll run the ball up the court. Like sometimes, in fact, I had a stat for, it's now a week old, but it was that Jamal Murray crosses half court slower than any other player in the NBA. Right. It's now the third year in a row that he has been healthy, that has been the case, that he brings the ball, it just walks the ball up slower than anyone else. And by the way, Bones Highland, shockingly slow as well, which makes me think, Bones loves to play fast. It makes me think it's more of a Nuggets personality trait than it is a Jamal personality trait. But I will say, Jokic, I think, was the fastest on the team in terms of when he brings the ball up the court, it's fast. Now, some of this is, most of the time Jokic is bringing it up, it is for fast break purposes, so there's some selection bias going on there.
Right.
But nonetheless, I agree that I think Jokic would play fast. It would be willing to and probably thinks it's smart to play fast. And when I say play fast, it's not shoot fast. It's just get the ball up and get into your entries fast. Make the other team – actually, here's the best way to think of it. Give the other team the shortest amount of time to rest after each possession. When they have to go back to when they have to, lock in again, don't give them 5, 6, 7 seconds. Give them 2 seconds before they have to be back and matched up.
Right. Well, it's getting to your sets. I mean, Jamal, it's been always frustrating to me because it's like – you could see him looking at Malone while he's walking the ball up the court. Yeah. And it's like he gets it up with 16 seconds left on the shot clock. Well, how much of your offense are you going to be able to run in 16 seconds? Get the ball, dump the ball, get that in Jokic, get him to run the actions, get, that kind of semi quasi triangle thing that they do. And then they get to the basket. And it's just like, if you maybe had saved yourself, I don't know, 2, 3 seconds there, you could probably do something else and maybe push the advantage on the defense. And they don't do that. And it's part of it to me, and maybe you can react to this, and this is one of my biggest pet peeves about the way the Nuggets have approached things the last 8 years, 9 years now, is that if you're not pressing the advantage, some of it has to do with your defense, and your defense and offense have to work together. And my biggest thing about the Nuggets is that they kind of exist on two different planes. They don't really work together. I call it 24-second defense. You're not going to induce steals. Your point is not to induce steals. You want to induce a missed shot. And sometimes that takes 24 seconds. Obviously, you want to be able to grab the rebound and go up the court. But if you don't get steals and if you don't play to that advantage, you're not getting any speed to your offense. There's nothing, you're not having a Corey Brewer leak out like in 2013, but you can at least play to your advantage. And you got some guys at guards out there, particularly Bruce Brown and KCP, who can get those things. They can get that advantage out there, and the Nuggets just don't have that in them, and it's been very frustrating to me.
As a parent, you really learn how every parent has different things that are important to them and that they emphasize with their kids. For example, some people really value studiousness, so yeah, their kids are always reading and ahead of their homework or this or that. Some parents really value toughness, so they're raising their kids to be these very tough whatever, or maybe it's discipline, or maybe it's creative. You have parents that are like always doing creative things and their kids become creative. I think it's the same with coaching, where you can really tell what Denver emphasizes and what they don't by their parent, which is in this case Michael Malone. Right. And I just think that that's one thing they don't. And when I asked Michael Malone the other day, I mentioned that stat to him, which he, said he was not aware of, there's a lot of stats. You're not always aware. Sometimes things are brought to your attention. You go, oh, okay. And then you think about it. Yeah. But I mentioned that stat to him, that Jamal brings it up late, and he really seemed to think it wasn't a big deal because Denver scores so easily on offense and they score well in the half court. Mm-hmm. And this is the struggle, I think, of this exact talking point. I think that it connects to other things in basketball. And that's where I think Michael Malone looks at it and goes, one connection, and goes, we score fine, therefore we don't need to play fast. But I do wonder if there's another connection to it. Well, yes, but if you ran the ball up the court, the other team would be tired. And not only would you score at the same rate, but your other team would have actually expended more energy, which means they would have been less affected on the other end. So again, it's something I'm kind of tied to, but it's also not the only thing, Jeff. Like, another one I'm kind of tied to right now is the NBA keeps getting longer and longer at positions 1 through 4.
Yeah.
And Denver, as much as they have some very good players with some length, I do think that the forward spot with Michael Porter out, I do think they're a little deficient there. And all of their best defensive lineups right now, at least right now, feature somebody smaller at that 3 spot. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if Christian Brown can be a little bit of a remedy to this, if he's a guy that maybe provides a little more size and length. Right. But even him, I just think you could use guys like a Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, just guys that are like 6'8", 6'9", but still can move like a small forward. I think that's another essential ingredient for a good defense.
Well, I would agree with this too. And I think Christian Brown's going to be an integral part of the Nuggets' ability to do exactly what I was talking about. Talk about a guy who likes to run. And it's Christian Brown. He is the quintessential hustle guy. And I think where we are right now is that, well, let me give you an example here. When Michael Malone was first hired, I'll never forget, I wrote an article about Michael Malone being at Denver Stiffs way, 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 way back when I was still actually writing shit, I wrote this about an article about him being a walk it up the court, slow it down, dump it into the post coach, which is what he right. was, and what his experience was, particularly coming from Golden State, because Golden State under Mark Jackson was very Bogut based, get it out to the shooters, inside out kind of offense, which was people forget about. And Kerr had really changed. In fact, there's a lot of things that were changed when Kerr came in. But the thing is, he took offense to that. And he called me out at his first ever press conference. He read the article and he called it out. And he says, I'm not some sort of walk it up the court, dump it down into the post coach. Well, he is. And he comes from the Van Gundy tree / Pat Riley tree. That is exactly where he came from. That old New York Knicks, late 90s basketball. This is how he kind of approaches things. It's hard to remove that from your DNA. point scored isn't always defense. There's different ways you can, especially in the modern era, when your scoring is so easy that you can interpret it. And I think part of my deal with Malone right now is that he's stuck in that points scored equals defense. So I need to limit possessions and I need to limit turnovers, which the turnovers are killing the Nuggets lately. So, I mean, when I look at this, I think, okay, is there another approach that they could take that he will be able to implement that will also help out what the Nuggets do overall? And I don't know if necessarily he is wired that way. That's just my interpretation of things.
He's definitely not. And I think there it, this last game was very interesting to me because Malone, I thought, changed his mentality and his approach. And then they lost the game. And I thought he maintained that calm. I need to not get too explosive, you know, this or that. They got a tough one tonight at Portland. Mm-hmm. And then they have tough games when they get back home against some good teams, even though they'll be home. I'm so curious to see how long he can maintain this. And one, does it change? Does Denver start to win and everybody starts to feel good about themselves? And two, just as Michael Malone, even when there is some bad play, how does he handle it? Is there an actual change from him that's sustainable? Because here's the one thing I'll say about Michael Malone. Like, I get frustrated with some of the stuff he does, especially this year. Mm-hmm. But I think he actually arrives at the right place, just oftentimes slower than maybe you want. But I think he does like change and adapt. And I do wonder if this is a long-term change he's seeing of, okay, this team needs a little different voice and texture than what they've needed in the past, and he needs to adjust to it. I think I kind of am optimistic he has.
Well, I hope that he sticks with it. There's a Mike Singer on his podcast today mentioned that he talked to a scout, and he said that the scout said that Malone was uniquely stubborn. And which I was like, okay, that's one way. That's a good way of couching that particular thing. But that's interesting. And he, you know, as Matt Moore, your co-host on Locked On Nuggets, would say, you have to prove it that it doesn't work kind of thing, which is just another way to say he's stubborn. But it is kind of like how his personality is. He has to be proven over and over and over again that it doesn't work. Well, he got there a little quicker. We have to give him credit. A little quicker this time because he did get Brown into the off the rotation, and it seemed to kind of have some benefit. Their defense still wasn't tremendous, but it did kind of work. And I want to see how it works against Portland tonight. Now that, you know, MPJ's not there, they're going to be, you know, kind of be fundamentally different from the last time they played Portland. So going into a game where they're maybe to ask you about this, where they're playing against the Blazers, a team that has a unique challenge with guards like that, kind of, you know, Damian Lillard being he's not heliocentric, but he's close. Do you think that this kind of new rotation will help them against the Blazers? Maybe a little way they weren't the last time they played them.
Well, do I think the new rotation will? Man, I worry about that, to be honest. I mean, here's the funny thing about it. Here's my actual take, and I haven't said this anywhere yet, but here's my actual take. I think the Nuggets have good defensive players. They don't have all-encompassing defensive players. Right. What I mean by that is Aaron Gordon is the most all-encompassing guy. I think he's a good defender. He's not a great defender, unfortunately, but I think he's good in all types of matchups, various types of matchups. KCP is really good at getting around screens, one-on-one containment, in particular against guards, like 6'5 and under guards. I think he's really good at that. And screen navigation, I would say, in particular. I think Christian Brown is really good in between that. Like, he can guard a bigger size players, really good at staying in front of guys. I don't know that he's going to be a great one-on-one ISO guy or what have you. Mm-hmm. Chanchar, I think, has been good against medium-sized guards more than anything else because he can give space and he actually moves his feet pretty well. Right. I think Zeke Nnaji is best probably around threes and fours out on the perimeter, perimeter-oriented threes and fours, but not necessarily interior. So you have these different types of defenders that do different things. And one of the hard things, I think, for Michael Malone in particular is in the past, he has seemed to like, these are my guys, hell or high water. These are my guys. And he'll talk about like DeAndre, like some nights it's for him. Some night he actually hasn't been that malleable in terms of reading the matchup or this or that. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if Christian Brown, Bruce Brown, KCP, I just think there's going to be nights where one guy is needed significantly more than the other. And I don't think that's a Malone trait where he would adjust night to night based on who he's going to play.
I agree with that. And, you know, I have this theory that, and you know, I may be the only one who has this theory that there's, if you are with a team for a long time, you get sucked into a rhythm, particularly if you're coming from a young team and you adjust to having a veteran roster. And I think with long-term coaches, and you go through this transition where you grow up with a team, essentially, it's harder for you to adapt than it would be if it was just a brand new coach, because you don't have previous relationships. You don't have any of that. There is long-term relationships with certain players, and coaches who are getting longer into their careers tend to develop a "you're my guy" kind of approach, which I hate, but fans tend to hate that because the new thing tends to be the thing that we like. Right. I will say though, that if a fan can see and as you have been pointing out for a long time on Locked On, I'll give you credit, the not playing Christian Brown was glaring and obvious, and it has been for a while, and
almost seemed suspicious.
It did. It almost seemed that way. So it's like if we can see it from a mile away, like it that's where the frustration comes from. And that's why people get like, maybe say, fire off hot takes about a coach being fired, which I haven't done. You know, and they say shit like that because they get caught up into, this is obvious. This is very obvious. I know you know more about basketball than me, but come on, this is obvious. Right. Davon Reed is not your savior. And coaches tend to double down when they hear that stuff. At least that's been in my experience.
Especially, and this is why I think, like, everybody in media, you just mentioned Mike Singer, but I mean, everybody's been mentioning this thing, uniquely stubborn. And there is, I think, a little bit of heel digging in that was occurring there for a several week stretch of, yeah, well, just wait, I'll show you. And then, okay, all of a sudden a team starts to spiral out of control. And it's like, maybe you don't need to, you know, try to do these types of things. But nonetheless, you know, all of these things are topical right now. But you've been covering, I'm now an old head, Jeff. I don't know if you know this, but you an old head. I'm an old head now too. I'm more interested in you now in that, for a lot of people, probably even a lot of people listening to the show, they've only known the Nuggets in the Michael Malone era.
Right.
You've been through multiple coaches.
Yes, I
have. Really only three. Really just George Karl, Brian Shaw, and now Michael Malone. But one thing, when everyone jumps to the, like, should Malone, is he the guy? First of all, that's going to be a season-long story. The Nuggets would have to spiral so far out of control for them to fire Michael Malone midseason or anything like that. But just like, I'm curious what your perspective is watching the entire arc up into this point of the Michael Malone era and just thinking, where is the balance between fresh voices, the risk that you might fire a George Karl and hire a Brian Shaw? Like, where are you just in general about are the Nuggets still on the rise? Have they stagnated? Are they losing their mojo a little bit? Like, where do you sense we are in that cycle?
They stagnated last year and they're still stagnating. And that is my view. I think last year, even with the injuries, they left wins on the table, and I saw it due to kind of lethargy. Jokic could only do so much, and he did absolutely yeoman's work in lifting the Nuggets. I mean, people in hindsight, well, 10 years from now, we'll be looking at what Nikola Jokic did last year and dragging this team to the playoffs the way he did into a sixth seed. They'll be amazed at what he did, because that team was lethargic and it was kind of stayed and it was needing a change. There was a change, but I don't think necessarily it got the change that it needed. I think the change that happened was the assumption that we needed two defensive players. And I think, just based on my view, what they needed was dynamic, extremely very knowledgeable and forward thinking coaches. The Nuggets have had a lot of offensive coaches lot of assistant coaches under Malone.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think, I mean, I love Ryan Bowen. He's been with him this whole time. But I don't necessarily think Malone has been getting the kind of hotshot dynamic voices that he needs to be hearing. And sometimes coaches do that for defense purposes. Sometimes it just happens because, you know, say like an organization refuses to pay for assistant coaches. You never know.
And that's a big piece of this, I think, too.
So that is where I thought. I think that was the change that needed to happen. I think he needed other voices to kind of let him know that there is another way. Whether he would have listened to it or not, I don't know. And then that could have been the reason he, you know, parts ways or whatever. But I think that's the change. And the Nuggets didn't do it. That's my view.
Here's an interesting one. The team that is sort of catching my attention right now is Sacramento.
Yeah.
And they have sort of built the Denver Nuggets. I mean, there's some little pieces that are different, obviously, but they've sort of tried to build the Denver Nuggets, but are playing a different style. Here's what's funny. Denver and Sacramento both ranked, I think, 4 and 5 on offense. Sacramento 0.1 points per 100 possessions ahead of Denver. And then both in the 20s on defense. I think Sacramento's 22nd, Denver 26th. Mm-hmm. So you've almost like tried to copy that. But I will say their offense, they don't have a Jokic. They have the B version of Jokic and Sabonis, but he is not Jokic. And a lot of what makes Denver effective, in my opinion, you know, obviously is Jokic, and the on-off numbers for 8 years now, you know, demonstrate this story. But part of me wonders, like, you're slightly worse than the Sacramento Kings offensively. They've stolen your style, but also added to it. And I'm looking around going, what is it that they've done? Now they have a new head coach in Mike Brown, who's not typically a very creative guy, but they have a new head coach in Mike Brown. Who's their lead assistant? Do you remember, Jeff? Jordy Fernandez. And I'm sitting here going, like, how interesting that they have a former Nuggets assistant. They've copied the Nuggets playbook here and are running a bunch of Nuggets stuff to the exact same level of success, but without Jokic in it. It's just one of these things I'm keeping my eye on going,
I think it depends on how much control your head coach demands. Say like Dan Issel, when he was here both times, he delegated a lot to Gene Littles and Mike Evans. And he was more of a rotations guy. So that was basically the way that ship shook down. When George was here, George was micromanaging a lot in his early days. By the time right before the year he got fired in the 57 win season, it was largely delegated to Vance Joseph, and not Vance Joseph, Vance guy's name's Vance, the guy who did created the dribble drive offense. He was a delegator by that point, and I think he was a better coach for it. Brian Shaw had terrible assistants. We won't get into that. But Michael Malone has had a litany of assistants. I mean, it's
Vance Wahlberg. Is that who you're thinking of?
Vance Wahlberg. Yes. There we go. So I'm old. Okay. I'm in my mid 40s. I forget things. But we get to this point where, like, how much control is Michael Malone willing to give up in order to have a dynamic offensive assistant? I don't know what the relationship is with David Adelman as far as on the offensive end. I don't know what the relationship with Ryan Saunders is on defense. I don't know if it's working. And I guess that's where my head goes.
But here's my point and why I said Jordy Fernandez is going there and then them kind of having this different profile. And by the way, this is all speculation, because who knows what Jordy Fernandez is doing? Is he captaining the offense? Is he influenced the offense? I don't know. But I've long said, and this is a critique of KSC as an entity, that they lack creativity as an organization. Yeah. Because they, in my opinion, there is a corporate culture there where there's a thumb from above being pressed down onto everybody in that org, where it's like, it's better to do nothing than it is to do the wrong thing. This is my outsider's perception of them, having worked with them on different events and different things. And oftentimes corporate culture manifests itself all the way down into different specific things. And my point is, Malone can be very stubborn. He's also, I think, a control freak in a lot of ways. Like, no coach is going to give power up and say, you know what, it's probably best if I don't influence who comes into who you guys draft or who this or that. Coaches want all the power as much as you can. And you almost have to fight them to say, no, we're going to do this or this or this. And that's, I think, I'm speculating on this, but my educated guess is that there's something of this going on with Michael Malone, where maybe you are not getting the right leadership, the right creativity, the right experimentation over the course of 8 years now. Mm-hmm. Maybe you are not getting those things for structural reasons about the way that he runs the ship. And it's hard to change who you are. This is like, sometimes you have to just work better within whatever it is you are. But I look at that and I go, wow, the Kings have really added a bunch of interesting offensive DNA to them. And they're doing it with a Denver Nuggets lead assistant. It's just another thing I kind of take note of. You looked at Chris Finch when he left and right. Thought, okay, there's a lot of interesting experimentation there. And by the way, no, their statute of limitations hasn't expired. I guess statute of limitations on some things doesn't expire till one player is gone. Nonetheless, I say this, I'm saying this as an educated insight that I'm not sold on. I'm not 100% sure on, but just reading the bill of pizzas that I have, I do think there's something to, like, you have so much control and you insist and demand and want so much control and you're so stubborn and stuck in your ways. Sometimes it doesn't breed the type of creativity to problem solve with the problems that you have.
I agree. I agree completely. Let me give you an anecdote. When Brian Shaw was first hired, I received information early that he was going to hire a certain reviled Nuggets executive, former Nuggets executive, as in Bernie Bickerstaff. And it was like, I conveyed to them that I said, well, I don't know if I would do that, that Bernie is not exactly loved here in Denver. That may not be one of the better things you could do. And say, okay. But one of the intrinsic problems that Brian Shaw had is that he did not have a budget to hire good assistants. And quite frankly, that has been true for coaches going all the way back to Jeff Bozilic. You can do the process of elimination and think, know about what I'm talking about here. So,
but the second part of that is, one is the budget to actually pay these guys, which I don't know. I mean, the Kroenkes have done atypical Kroenke things over the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So their reputation precedes them for good reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is an opportunity there, but there's also if you're a great creative offensive coach, do you want to go somewhere where it has the most freedom, the most, you know, of those types of things? And
yes.
So again, maybe neither is in play. Maybe both are in play. Maybe one or the other, but it's just another piece of all of this.
I think it's both. I mean, let's lay our cards on the table here. It is a product of what you can get for what you can get, and a working with someone who has a vast amount of control over things that you probably should be in your purview. Let's put it to you that way. Both can be true. And I think that's been an issue. But at the same time, the Nuggets are, I'm looking at this now, I'm talking about them. The Nuggets are 14-10. And obviously the Phoenix Suns got waxed last night. Waxed in a way that it was like game 7 of the Western Conference Finals waxed. That's how bad it was. And you look at that and you go, huh. And then the Golden State Warriors, who cannot win on the road. They are 2-11 on the road. And they got beat by the Utah Jazz in humiliating fashion last night. So you're thinking, okay, well, maybe we're kind of nitpicking based on where the Western Conference is right now, but I guess we're coming at it from expectation. And my question to you is, can you remove from yourself in your analysis, can you move the specter of expectation? Because I don't think we can. It has to be part of the equation.
It's funny, the Nuggets experience of your lifetime, Jeff, because you do have the 80s, you know, but you were a kid at that time. Me, I was like a baby. I don't have any memories, but you were a kid there.
Right.
When you get to the 90s, it's all about a stunted climb up, right? Like it crashed before it really took off. It crashed on the runway in terms of like getting ready to go. Yep. When you get to the Melo era, 2009 was both the first and in many ways last year of the pinnacle. It was the year.
Right.
And my point is, you couldn't change in 2009 and say, well, it's not championship or bust. I mean, we're trying. It's like, no, this is it. Like, you don't know when this closes. You don't know when it ends. So can I change the expectations? Absolutely not. Everything this season has to be judged with, are they going to get it done? And if it's not, it doesn't mean that they don't have a chance next year. It just means that you're not sure it's ever going to be better than this chance right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, look at 2009-10. George Karl gets cancer.
Act of God.
Nuggets were the second best team in the Western Conference and were breathing down the Lakers' necks. And they were better. They got Aaron Aflalo, who was an upgrade over Dante Jones. and they just were gelling, and it was just amazing. And there was talk of Melo being MVP discussion, which is, you know, in hindsight laughable, but you know, it just, that's where it was. And then it came crashing down in via George Karl getting cancer and Adrian Dantley being the lead assistant and or the designated interim right. coach. Right. And that killed it. And you can't account for that sort of thing, but it was part of expectation. And that influenced everything the Nuggets did for the rest of for that next season. What Melo coming in, it really right. did. How much is expectation influencing things now? Because obviously the moves that Calvin made were to get specifically, I think, Malone, the guys he wanted, the people yeah. that he wanted and felt that he needed. Yeah. So that, how is that expectation reflecting on both him and the players at this point? Is that floating around in their heads? I guess we can't know, but in your interpretation, could you kind of see it manifesting itself on the court?
Again, the players, I don't know, because players just have it like, you know, how much does KCP feel that, you know, he's been a bunch of different places. Is Denver Nuggets, does he bleed gold right now? You know, like he's still becoming a Nugget in right. many ways. So I don't know, but I do think, no, there's no question for Michael Malone, who is always sort of seen around the corner on a lot of these types of things about where am I most vulnerable? What's coming up that's going to be a narrative decision, you know, thing on me. And the last year and a half has been a total like timeout on all of those things. He was never going to get fired in these last years and a half unless it was a complete disaster. There was just no, you get swept by the Suns, who cares? You get right. losing 5 to Golden State, understandable. There was never going to be blowback there. But you better believe he knows what this year is about for him personally.
Right.
You better believe. And by the way, this is a contract year in terms of coaching, right? He has a contract for next season, mm-hmm. but that's generally you get fired with 1 year left on your deal. So he has to know that, yeah, the next 5 months could mean the difference for him personally between remaining on as the Denver Nuggets head coach and not. And he has to also know that his sort of reputation and his future in coaching probably largely hinges on that. So for him, does it affect his work? I don't know about that. I'm not going to speculate on that, but just the logic of it, you better believe Michael Malone knows exactly how all of these pieces connect in terms of a narrative standpoint and his job.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen it manifest itself several times. George Karl was always seemed to be impervious to expectation. I know he's the most remarkable. Maybe it's because by the time he got to the Nuggets, he had been through so many jobs that, you know, he didn't care. But you could bet that definitely thought it got to Issel in 1995. And it got really, you know, to the point where he resigned because he right. couldn't take it anymore. I think other, you know, coaches go through expectation and they handle the specter of expectation differently. Some people thrive, some people don't. I'm not saying that Malone hasn't. I'm just saying that the vibes of this year have been absolutely weird.
Yeah.
For a team that should be, you know, like gearing up and getting, it's been a strange year from the outside, because I'm no longer there at the arena every day. I'm just looking at it from the outside looking in, and I think fans do too. They're looking at it thinking like, this is there's something off here. Everything's kind of weird right now.
But I'm telling you, the other piece of this, and it actually might end up being the single biggest piece of this, is that the Nuggets schedule has totally screwed them out of any type of continuity. Because if you think about it, we go to Summer League every year. I'm there usually for like 5 nights. The last day, and I'm having a great time. No complaints, no fights with anybody. But the last day, I'm kind of ready to go home, right? You're just kind of like, I Vegas, love you guys. I've had a good time, but I'm a little sick of you. Like, you didn't do anything. I just am sick of you. The Nuggets have been in that for like 8 weeks now, going back to training camp where they were away from their families. By the way, another decision that in hindsight, yes, there's gyms in Colorado you could have done. Let me just put it that way. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, seeing how this stretch has played out, deciding to take a week when you could have been at home around your families, a week to go on the road. To me, I look at that now and go, when has Jokic seen his daughter over the last 8-9 weeks since the start of training camp?
Right.
It has honestly probably not been for 3 consecutive nights since it began. And by the way, he's been around Michael Porter Jr. every day for 8 weeks. Like, that's what I mean. Your family, you're not around hardly at all. People don't realize how little they've been around their families. And meanwhile, their teammates, they've been around every single day and no one else for 8 weeks. And I do think there's a little bit of that compounding with this team, where once they get back, and just get to see their kids, see their wives, see their girlfriends, see whatever it is, be home for sleep in their bed. I do think a lot of this stuff like becomes easier for everyone.
Well, I want to mention this, and this is this will be the last thing before we let you go. And I appreciate you coming on, man. And Matt Moore mentioned something about the 2012-13 team. This was, and he was talking about that was the first real team he'd covered and all that stuff. And I mean, I had been covering the Nuggets since 2009 by that point. And I remember I was the Nate did the games and I would go to practices and stuff like that, but I couldn't go to a lot of them. So really it was just kind of that was our credential experience, really starting simultaneously with what Matt was talking about. You know, the interesting thing is he mentioned on your on Locked On that the team was kind of like shrugging its shoulders about like, yeah, we'll see about the team. That is true, but let me revise that. There's something very similar to this year that happened that year. And it is the Nuggets started out that year with 22 of their first 32 games on the road. It was hell. And they somehow survived with a 15-13 record or something like that. They were just, I mean, or maybe 15, I don't forget what it was. But it was just above 17-15. Yeah, that's what it was. Just above 500. And then they won. They won 57 games that year. So they won 40 games and lost 10 or 12 at the rest for the rest of the year. And a lot of that was due to the home slate that they got for starting in basically January and running through the rest of the year. Okay. The NBA really screwed them at the beginning, but then it got better, kind of like this year, right? So where you're kind of sick of each other, you don't want to be around each other, you hate it, everything is, you know, you're being around someone on the road all the time. The interesting thing about that, though, the player that was chief among the people who are shrugging their shoulders on about that roster was Andre Iguodala, who had one foot out the door and had a condescending attitude about this Nuggets squad. It only takes one. I don't think there's anyone like that on this Nuggets squad. I really don't. I don't think there's anyone who feels like they're just tolerating this Nuggets team like Iguodala was. And I think if we're going to talk to about a silver lining, the fact that they are relatively together, you know, as far as I can interpret, is going to help them through the rest of the year. I think this is a salvageable thing, and I think they can get through whatever rough patch they're going through once they get into this home slate, and if everything goes right, they can hit the ground running and just take off with wins.
I agree as well. And that's why the season has not really been that fun to this point, to be honest with you. I don't think it's been that fun, but I do think fun is on the horizon, and fun is such an important ingredient for a season. Like I brought this up a few times. What was it? They won the Super Bowl 2015. It was like not even in my top 10 favorite years of the Broncos, man. No. Like, no. And that's not to say if the Nuggets win this one, I'll sit through any misery because I'm closer to this Nuggets team and a win would just mean more to me, but I'll sit through misery if that's the case. But I feel like it's often a prerequisite that you feel good about yourself and I'll play connected and get connected. And I both hope, but also believe that we are going to see that over the next 3 weeks leading up to Christmas and culminating in many ways with that Christmas Day game against the Phoenix Suns. So it's a great opportunity. I think that the temperament of Michael Malone in the last game, as well as the temperament of the players being frustrated after their third straight loss, that's a good thing. Michael Malone being frustrated but calm, I think was a good thing. Tonight's a really, really tough one against the Portland Trailblazers. But after that, you come home, and I think Denver builds a little momentum.
I agree. And we're ending this on a great note. We're ending this on a really great and positive note. So, Adam, where can everyone find you? Twitter, everything that they need to know.
I don't know. People know where I'm at. I hate giving it on podcasts. I hate like saying those things because I always listen and I never write down anyone's handle or anything. You know what I mean?
Well, the important thing is, you know, mine. So anyway, thank you all. Thank you all for joining us on the latest Morecast. I'll be back soon with another episode. Goodbye.